This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Around the corner, touchdown, Ian Book, and we are all tied at 20.
Mooney back to hub for three.
Got it again!
That's a Big Ten Tournament championship winner!
From 96.1 WSBT.
The Virginia Cavaliers are the national champions.
Here's Yohe with a steal, gives it up, and Johnson throws it down.
Fires, it's caught, touchdown, T.Y. Hilton.
The sports leader.
Henry! Allow myself to introduce myself.
Your hosts are Eric Hansen and Darren Pritchett.
Welcome to a brand new week of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on good old 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, and live on the Sports Beat app, which you can get right now for free at the iTunes or Google Play Store. And on that app, the show runs 24 hours a day until a new show is posted. You can listen to it live. You can listen to it whenever you'd like. So the app comes in awfully handy. And with spring football practice starting later this week, if you love Notre Dame football, we will restart our Notre Dame football coverage hot and heavy coming up this week here on WSBT Radio. Speaking of hot and heavy, it is Eric Hansen, Fighting Irish Football Insider for the South Bend Tribune. I'm WSBT Radio Sports Director Darren Pritchett, and we are very happy to be with you on this Monday, March the 2nd, 2020. Can you believe in just a little over 3 weeks is opening day for baseball? How about that?
That's exciting.
And in 13 days, we will have a bracket in our hand. And may I suggest, this is just a simple suggestion. If you are in a bracket pool, go ahead and buy the matches and the kerosene now, because as we've seen in this college basketball regular season, anything goes, and this could be one of those tournaments where maybe five games into the first round on Thursday, you may just start throwing away your bracket. So I would say just buy the matches and the kerosene now, because that bracket probably is going to go up in smoke, more than likely. This might be a year people win the bracket that don't know really much about it. They just pick teams for certain reasons. That might be the way to go. I mean, what the heck is going to happen?
Well, Bill Belinsky's mom, Dolores, won it a few years ago. She favored the Polish coaches, which helps when Duke wins it. So, and I think that there was a color scheme thing going on too, but she ended up beating us. I ended up second last year in ours. I did not have a color scheme theme. I don't know what I'm going to do this year. I may do darts. I may get my grandson, my oldest grandson, did it a couple years before that and beat me. So I may have him get back in or have him help me.
I have not been in our company bracket in like 5 years because it got to the point, for whatever reason, since I host a sports show, and when someone else beats me, I would always hear about it. You know? It's like they think I have all the answers. No, I don't. I'm like everybody else, just guessing along the way. So that just kind of wore me out. I'm a sore loser, I guess.
I think pre-internet, it was easier for people in our profession to do well in it because we kind of knew who the sleeper teams were. Mm-hmm. Just from having to watch basketball a year. But now you can really study and see what Jay Billis thinks, and you know, you can be an expert pretty fast. That's what my grandson did, was read the Jay Billis stuff and then kind of used that as a guideline. He didn't copy it, but that was kind of for the teams he didn't know.
I've been giving away one of my secrets for years. When in doubt, pick the Missouri Valley team to go to the Sweet 16.
There you go.
It normally happens. I did not pick Loyola to go to the Final Four a couple of years ago, but I had him in the Sweet 16. Never go wrong with a Missouri Valley team.
When am I going to fill out my Big Ten hockey bracket?
You can do that right now. I bet you I could fill it out for you right now. Just take care of it.
I have to tell you one real quick story from the arena. After I left the show, I went down kind of that back stairwell you showed me, and there was this really cute kid and his dad, and he goes, Eric Hansen. And I'm like, how do I know you? And he's like, his dad said that they listen to the show every day. And so we have some hockey fans that listen to the show every day. And I want to just say hello to that dad and his son because they were so wonderful and so fun to meet.
You act like it's a shock that someone might listen to this program that's into hockey.
Well, I am because
I'm offended in some way.
Because he was about the boy was about the age of my third grandson, Rio. So that's a little bit out of our demographic, I would say. And he said that the dad said the boy listens every day.
Well, I will say this. Youth hockey involvement is at an all-time high. We get over 5,000 fans for every game, so there are quite a few hockey fans in our area.
I thought it was really cool, and I just wanted to say hi to them. I also ran into John Baxter.
You did? Good.
Yeah.
Excellent.
And it was so cool. I hadn't seen him in 20 years.
Used to be with the South Bend Silverhawks for many years,
yep.
And now helps out over at Notre Dame on a game day.
Absolutely. That was wonderful.
Good.
So it was a wonderful day at the hockey arena, except for the team.
I was going to say, then the games took place, and highly disappointing, to say the least. I know we're going to get to some football, basketball. Let me just get the hockey out of the way. Notre Dame entered the week with a chance to be co-Big Ten champions. They ended up as the 5 seed in the Big Ten tournament. They lost to Michigan State Friday 3-1. We're down 2-0 late in the third Saturday, roared back to tie that. So they ended up being the 5 seed. They lost home ice for the first round along the way. And so now Notre Dame will play at Minnesota coming up this weekend in a best-of-three series, and that makes my daughter very unhappy, who is in a big play this weekend, Friday, Saturday, and Sunday, and now Dad can't be there. So I'm extra disappointed we're not at home, so I could have had the chance to see that high school play. So I'm probably going to be in the doghouse now for a little bit of time.
Okay.
That's part of being on the road in our business. You miss family things a lot. And
can they let you go to the dress rehearsal at least or something?
Well, we leave on Thursday, so that was brought up. Could I come down? And that was being worked on, but unfortunately we leave on Thursday.
So,
didn't work out. I hate to be selfish, but I was more disappointed for myself for not at home than anything else because you want to be there in those particular moments.
Absolutely.
So, a little bummed out, but we'll head on the plane for Minneapolis on Thursday, and we'll see what happens. And it's plain and simple for Notre Dame. If they lose the best-of-three series, the season is over. They have lost out any chance of making the tournament as an at-large with last weekend. They lost out on a co-championship, so it just didn't work out. But you know what? This team's been around 500 for a while now, and they played great the weekend before. They didn't play as well, and that's kind of the sign of an inconsistent team. Eric, at the end of the day, you're close to 500, and even though this team, when they play well, they're really, really good. They're just awfully inconsistent and just couldn't get it done last weekend. So it is Friday, 8 o'clock Eastern, Saturday, 8 o'clock Eastern, and if there's a game three, it's 7 o'clock Eastern on Sunday. All three games on Z94.3 FM. And if anyone's going to be at that play, if they want to FaceTime me, I just will have that on my phone, calling the hockey game and watching the play at the same time. Maybe that's the way to go. All right, so that's our hockey segment for your two new friends.
Yes.
There's some hockey information
cool
for you. All right, congratulations really quick to the Northwood girls basketball team who won a state championship over the weekend down in Indianapolis, beating Salem 37-29. Maddie Payne, 19 points, 10 rebounds for Northwood, who wins the state championship. Congratulations to them.
They had a tough road. They had to beat number two and number one back-to-back to win that state championship. That's impressive.
No question.
And they're a great defensive team, Northwood.
You mean defense wins? How about this? Northwood has the highest scoring state championship win in their class, and now they have the lowest winning score for a state championship game. So they're just rewriting the history book. So Northwood, congratulations on your state championship. Let's get to the NFL Combine. Defensive backs, Eric, were on the field yesterday down in Indianapolis. Notre Dame had three defensive backs that were involved in the festivities. Cornerback Troy Pride Jr., safeties Aloy Gilman and Jalen Elliott. We've talked a lot about Troy Pride. We know he has excellent speed. He has track speed. And the key for Troy Pride Jr. going forward is his ability to cover at an elite level in the National Football League because we know the speed is there. Okay, 40-yard dash, Eric. He ended up with a 4.40. I've read that's a disappointment. 4.40 is pretty good. That's just slightly faster than what Chase Claypool did,
right?
The Irish wide receiver. So 4.40, 40-yard dash, is that truly a disappointment? And does that hurt him in some way, which is really hard to imagine?
It doesn't hurt him. In fact, for people that don't know Troy Pride's standards for himself, they were actually impressed. I was watching it live when he ran it, and the analysts were beaming about that. That was the fourth best time for a cornerback. It was tied for the 11th best time overall. But Troy would have liked to run faster than that. He's not going to – it's not going to be something that pushes him up, because he already did so much of that at the Senior Bowl, but it's a time that's not going to drop him either. I mean, it's going to confirm what people saw on tape when they saw him cover people on deep routes, which is he doesn't get beat deep. Where Troy made the money at the Senior Bowl was shoring up his shorter and intermediate game.
Okay.
So so there's a lot of positives to take. You know, his vertical jump and standing broad jump weren't off the charts, but they were good enough. So I thought he did really well. He's the kind of guy that's so competitive, I could see him trying to better his 40 time at Pro Day. But, you know, the Pro Day and the combine times, when they come down significantly, people kind of discount that a little bit just because there's not the same, you know, it's not the same setting, it's not the same timing.
Okay.
But I think 4.40 is terrific. I mean, you're the fourth fastest cornerback. That's pretty good.
Okay, so he did what he needed to do then.
He did what he needed to do.
And so now, is he a guy that is third round material?
I think his ceiling is second round, and I think his floor is fourth round.
So realistically third.
Yeah.
Okay. So that's Troy Pride Jr. Now the two safeties. Aloy Gilman got a lot of recognition yesterday.
Yeah.
For cleaning up all the garbage in one of the end zones. There was athletic tape, plastic water bottles, debris. And after everything was done, Aloy went over and picked it all up and threw it away in the trash can. And that was noticed by the NFL Network, and they gave him extra props for, I guess, being a guy that was into the small details. But he had a 4.60 40. Analyze that for me.
I think that's what he needed to run. If he had been in the 4.5s, that would have helped him. Had he been slower than 4.6, people would have, where he really helped himself, Darren, was in the 20-yard shuttle, which is a big drill for safeties and corners.
Okay.
It measures change of direction and quickness. And he had the best time of any safety, and he had the fourth best time of any position, of anybody in the whole combine. And that's going to help, because change of direction and quickness is very important for a safety. So as 4.6, you know, I don't think that's slow enough where you say, boy, he's going to be in trouble if he ever gets in a one-on-one situation. It's not ideal, but the quickness and the change of the direction, I think people are going to be impressed by that.
Jalen Elliott, another safety, 4.80 40-yard dash. Now, I'm not an expert in these things, but I was very surprised that was his 40 time. That seems awfully slow from watching him on the football field at Notre Dame.
I can't fathom that there wasn't some kind of injury or some kind of, you know, sometimes when people, even when they're warming up, they'll tweak a hamstring. And then he kind of pushed through the other drills. There wasn't anything that really jumped out at you as far as, boy, that a wow number. His standing broad jump at 10.5 was decent. But, you know, I would be shocked if he didn't rerun that at Pro Day and have a much better time. That seems off to me that it could be. I can't imagine it being above 4.6. That just seems way off to me.
Do you agree with some of the things that have been written right around the combine, that Jalen Elliott had a year at Notre Dame in which he took a step back from his junior campaign?
I don't think either Elliott or Gilman did, but there were some people that felt like that. You didn't see the wow plays with either one of them as much as you did the year before. I think some of that was because Kyle Hamilton was on the field making the wow plays, so there were fewer of them for those two to make.
Were they protecting the corner opposite of Troy Pride possibly a bit too?
I agree with that. So their role changed a little bit. It's different when you're playing safety and your corners are Love and Pride versus Pride and sometimes Sean Crawford mm-hmm. and sometimes somebody else. And so, yeah, I at the Senior Bowl, people singled him out as the best safety, you know, having the best week of practice there. So I think this 4.80 and also those comments are misrepresentative of what he did. I mean, Darren, we can see how quickly something can gain momentum, and the whole Chase Claypool tight end thing. I mean, even after I talked to Chase and he said, I'm a wide receiver and I'm going to surprise people with how fast I run, there was still pushback. And even mm-hmm. to the point where the NFL combine people said, you can do the tight end drills instead of the wide receiver if you'd like. Now, they did that with several players, not just Chase. But there was that rumor, that weird thought became such a surreal reality that people were convinced that this was going to be a thing. And then he runs a 4.42 and just ends it. You know, we saw the same thing with Ronnie Stanley and supposedly being soft. Look at his career now. Look at where he was drafted.
He's considered the best left tackle in the game by some people
now. As soon as the combine starts, it's when you get to silly season. And there are there are GMs and personnel people that will spill things to reporters that are not true to get it to spread.
I hope I did not give a poor example, I believe, on Friday's program with Sean, but am I correct? The San Francisco 49ers did not show a lot of interest in Mike McGlinchey, but it was on purpose so people would stay off
correct.
The scent of what they were trying to do.
You were absolutely on point on that. Yeah. It even surprised McGlinchey that he got picked by the 49ers, okay. But they wanted to get people off the scent, and they did not want them to know that they were going to take him that high. And so they intentionally didn't talk to him, and didn't put things out about how wonderful they thought he was. So it's we have 51 days of that coming up, Darren. That's how far away we are from the draft.
All I know is I have a feeling the San Francisco 49ers are pretty good at playing poker because they got the Chicago Bears to move up a spot and give up all those picks to get Mitchell Trubisky. They were that fearful of someone moving ahead, or even the 49ers, oh my goodness, that they might take him. Crazy. Crazy season. It's kind of fun in a way.
Right.
But then when you see the draft, it's like, oh, so you weren't really interested in this guy, or you were. It's you're right. It is the silly season, and it's just getting started.
The funny thing is, at these times, it wasn't as bad this year as I can remember it some years, of NFL reporters saying, have you talked to the Giants? Have you talked to the Giants? Ugh. You know, like, yeah, they probably have, and every other team, so, except for the one that's going to pick them. So,
really interesting. Things were done differently this year. The Denver Broncos and the Los Angeles Rams did not send their assistant coaches to Indianapolis. They just did all their analysis by watching the NFL Network.
That's interesting.
Vic Fangio, kind of a new way of doing things, the old Bears defensive coordinator. He went, Elway went, but all the assistant coaches stayed back. And they're going to analyze film, do all those other things. And the head coach and the general manager, they're going to do the interviews. So is there a need to have those assistant coaches there? Those two teams felt like it was not necessary, so maybe a new wave starting at the NFL Combine.
It's going to be interesting when Notre Dame has its pro day on April 1st to see how many big-time execs show up there.
I think there's going to be.
I do, too, because I still think people want to get to the bottom of the Okorah thing. And I also think they want to see a little bit more of Komet. And then now Claypool in the mix. So
I think that I think the wide receivers, there are so many.
Yeah.
But yet a lot of them have different traits. I think teams are going to do extra work.
Yeah.
Because there are so many wide receivers to choose from, and it may become a game of chess.
Yeah.
Well, do I need to take a wide receiver in the first round?
Right.
Because wide receiver 13 and 14 may be close enough to 4 and 5.
Yeah.
I'll just wait and get my defensive tackle or get my offensive lineman.
Yeah, I'd say, you know, if you're not taking CeeDee Lamb or one of the two Alabama guys, you could probably wait and get somebody really, really good.
Yeah, Jury and Ruggs.
Judy and Ruggs, yeah.
Yeah, Ruggs, that 40 time.
Yeah.
I've been all on Claypool for my team, but I kind of like the Ruggs guy now, but I don't want to take our wide receiver in the first round. I really don't, because you just feel like you can get something really good.
You can get some another position and still get a really, really good wide receiver.
Just for my Broncos, I think we have 2 second-round picks, so you can...
Yeah.
But I like that Ruggs kid in the slot.
Yeah.
That could be fun. That could be fun. Okay, so NFL Combine in the books. We're just about 7 weeks away from the National Football League draft. Our My 5 question of the day in about 20 minutes. Eric's going to rank which Notre Dame players had the best combine. And as the week goes on, we can get into some different conversations. After the combine has now taken place, how many Notre Dame guys get drafted? So we can have that conversation at a later time. 27 minutes after 5 o'clock, Sports Beat brought to you by our title sponsor, Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. And by Rossini's Pizza. Carry out, you're proud to bring home. Lincoln Way East in Mishawaka, across from Beeger School. Coming up next, we turn our attention to the round ball. Again, we're 13 days away from having a bracket in hand. And we've been saying for a long time, Notre Dame is a good distance off the bubble. They needed to win out going into Florida State to really have a serious go at this and to really make that Florida State game mean something. Unfortunately, they didn't get it done in Winston-Salem on Saturday. So what does all this mean? What about the old Indiana Hoosiers right now? Lost a tough one on the road yesterday. Where do they stand? We'll get into some basketball conversation coming up. And again, the My 5 back to NFL Combine conversation as Sports Beat rolls on this Monday. He's Eric. I'm Darren. Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat live on 96.1 WSBT and also live on the Sports Beat app. We will just pass this along. This is basically old news on the program, but it's now official. Notre Dame has officially announced the new additions to the coaching staff on the football side. John McNulty as tight ends coach, and Mike Mickens will be a defensive backs coach focusing on cornerbacks.
How about that?
So now we have a complete official coaching staff. The venting is complete. Is that what you call it?
Vetting.
Vetting, that's what it is. Not
and
venting.
Venting.
You've been venting.
I've been venting, yes.
Vetting, excuse me. So that's now all official with spring practice starting later on this week. And we'll keep you covered here on WSBT Radio. Of course, the South Bend Tribune and IndyInsider.com. Coming up next hour at 6:07, Mishawaka boys basketball coach Ron Heklinski will join us. And then at 6:35, 1 hour from right now, Notre Dame baseball coach Link Jarrett joins the program. The Irish swept Presbyterian over the weekend, and Notre Dame is now 7-2, heading into ACC play, where they will take on the North Carolina Tar Heels in Chapel Hill coming up this weekend.
Well, that'll be different than playing the Blue Hose.
From Blue Hose to Tar Heels.
That's right. Carolina Blue.
Irish lead the country in steals right now. Playing small ball.
Okay.
We'll see what happens when we get into ACC play, but Link squad off to a great start,
yeah.
So we'll talk to him coming up in just a little bit here on WSBT Radio. College basketball. A little music, please. There we go. You're home for the NCAA Men's Basketball Tournament once again this year. 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Wall-to-wall coverage of the first round right here on WSBT Radio. We start around noon, get done about 1 in the morning. We're excited not just because we get a day off or two from Sports Beat. We just love the NCAA tournament and the drama that it brings to the table. So we will have the first round games in Dayton coming up.
Okay.
In about 11 days or so. Or 15 days, actually. Then we'll get to the first round on Thursday, and away we go, all the way through the national championship game. So keep that in mind. If you're at work, in your car, you want to listen to some hoops, we'll have wall-to-wall coverage of the NCAA tournament right here on WSBT Radio. Unless Notre Dame wins the ACC tournament, unfortunately, the Irish will be in the National Invitational Tournament. Of course, your home for the Irish is on WSBT Radio, and normally they don't play on days of the NCAA tournament. Sometimes they do on the weekends, but in the first round, I don't think that will disrupt the tournament. The NIT will probably be Monday, Tuesday, or Wednesday. That's normally the way it goes.
Yeah.
Now, the Irish can still win the ACC tournament, and that is their path to get to the tournament. We have tried to lay out the facts for several weeks now that it was a long shot to make it as an at-large, and they needed to run the table pretty much going into Florida State, then beat Florida State for that big quad one win to get them near the bubble. They were a good distance away, so we can pretty much, I think, officially end the bubble talk now at this moment as Notre Dame lost over the weekend to Wake Forest, 84-73, down 16, come back to take the lead, couldn't close it out, and they lost the game by 11. So that dropped Notre Dame to 18-11 on the season. So before we talk about resumes and that type of stuff, let's just take a step back as Notre Dame could not beat the Demon Deacons down in Winston-Salem, 84-73, despite another tremendous performance by John Mooney, 24 points and 17 rebounds. Now, defensively, Mike Bray was not very happy with the bigs outside of Leshefsky in this particular game. But Mooney, at least points and rebounds, got the job done with 24 and 17. And courtesy of Fighting Irish Media, here's what Mike Bray had to say in the press conference following the 11-point loss to Wake Forest.
Well, give them credit. I mean, we had no answers for the big fella tonight. He is so gifted. We tried a little bit of everything. We played a lot of zone, and that got us back in it. But then they made three timely threes that kind of broke our back. So something like that, you got to give them credit. We just really couldn't deal with the inside-outside combination of Saar and Childress and Brown. And But I love that we battled back. We always find a way to make it interesting, but couldn't quite get over the hump. We missed some free throws tonight, which were key, big free throws. That hurt us. So. But I thought, you know, I think Wake has played with a great vibe all week. They played with a great belief all week, and they've gotten two wins because of it.
Also, Mike Bray was asked about the play of Olivier Saar, who had 30 points and 17 rebounds against the Fighting Irish, and this is where post defense was not one of Mike's favorite things from this game.
I don't know if we did a good job preparing to come down on him and double him early. We couldn't guard him one-on-one. Our best post defender was Nate Leshefsky tonight. Our senior big guys didn't guard anybody tonight. I love them to death, but they didn't play any defense. That's why we started Nate in the second half and said, you got five, just foul the heck out of him if you have to. And he was physical on him, and we played some zone. So we don't have any answers for him. And I guess we better figure some out in case we see him in Greensboro, now that you say that.
Okay, so the Irish come up short at Wake Forest, 84-73. Let's just go through the motions for people that follow this stuff. Again, the resume is not strong right now, but here's where they stand. They're 18-11 overall. The net ranking is 58 against quad one teams. They're 2-6 against quad two. They are now 1-4. They've lost a win along the way because a quad two win has become a quad three win. These numbers fluctuate from time to time, so you have to kind of keep up with it to get the accurate number. But, you know, Eric, that resume is not strong right now. We've talked about the non-conference strength of schedule. That's probably the part of the equation that no matter how good they play, they could not overcome it. They're right around 295, 300 in non-conference strength of schedule. Again, it comes down to this for the committee. Who did you beat? Who did you play? And where did you play them? And the Irish played three good non-conference games against Indiana, Maryland, and UCLA. And boy, UCLA is a different team right now. They are coming out of nowhere in the West. They might win the Pac-12, which after we watched them against Notre Dame, I thought 500 in the Pac-12 would be a heck of a run for the old wooden boys. But they are playing great basketball. The problem is they just didn't play enough teams in the middle. A lot of teams in the bottom of the rankings in these RPIs or strength of schedule things. And it really has come back to hurt Notre Dame because the ACC is so down this year. But Eric, the bottom line is the resume doesn't look strong right now. And the eye test, they have not looked overly strong the last couple of weeks. They are winning games they wouldn't have won last year. Credit to them. They are a much improved team. But they are beating teams near the bottom of the ACC and having to make roaring comebacks and hit last second shots to beat them. And with the ACC being so down, you do that against a Big East team or a Big Ten team, you look at it differently. But unfortunately, these are teams ranked very low in the net rankings, like Carolina. You have to roar back to beat Boston College, and then you can't get it done against Wake Forest, who just beat Duke. Hey, you cannot take that away from Wake Forest. But, you know, the eye test has not been what it needs to be the last couple of weeks, even though, again, this is the bottom line. They are much improved over last year. They're plus six in the ACC. They've got a chance to be plus eight at the end of the day. So everything is pointing up, but it's just not going to point up enough to be one of those teams that get into the field of 68 unless you win the ACC tournament.
Yeah, it's weird. Neither the men's or the women's team is going to be in the NCAA tournament.
This could be the first time the men, the women, and the hockey team all miss in the same year since 1995.
Wow. Were they in the CCHA then, right? The hockey team was?
Yeah, it was a different era of hockey then. Yeah. They had never made the NCAA tournament at that point. 2004 was the first year under Coach Poulin. They made it to the NCAA tournament and led Minnesota at the end of the first period up in Grand Rapids, I want to say. And apparently Don Lucia, the old Notre Dame defenseman, wasn't very happy and might have had a few choice things to say to the boys losing to the Irish after the first period up there. So, yeah, that was a different era. And, you know, it was different for Notre Dame basketball at that time, too. So things have changed, and now it's just one of those times where Notre Dame is a much improved team. As a fan, you got to feel like, hey, they've come a long way since last year. This would be the third straight year they missed the tournament. You lose Mooney, you lose Gibbs, you lose Pfluger. So I'm sure there's trepidation out there. The Stanford grad or the Stanford transfer is going to make a nice difference. It sounds like he might be the second or third best player on the team if he was playing right now. So that's a good sign. But you just see Mooney walk out the door, and it's like, oh, boy, how do you replace those numbers? Well, you replace it in the aggregate. It might take two or three guys to replace those numbers.
It's interesting. Stanford is in the last. Last team in right now. They'd love to have him.
Well, the teams that Notre Dame played in the non-conference, Indiana is still in. Maryland could win the Big Ten. And then, again, UCLA, they beat by double digits. But, boy, UCLA has really turned things around over the last month and a half. So it's hard as a fan because, unfortunately, for, would you say, 90% of fans, it comes down to whether you make the NCAA tournament or not, which is really unfair.
But it's true.
But it's true. Yeah, oh, absolutely. Yeah. I'm not denying it.
Yeah.
And sure, when your team doesn't make it, it's disappointing because it's so much fun to see your team's name come up on Selection Sunday, who you're playing, where at, the build-up, the excitement on the campus when your team is going to play in the first round, and then you win a game, and then you start dreaming big. Yeah. Hey, we're three wins away from going to the Final Four. It is the ultimate. But, Eric, I do, and I'm being honest. I'm not being a homer here. This is being truthful.
Okay.
Will it be a disappointment for this program to miss it a third straight year? Absolutely. And I want people to be disappointed because if they're not disappointed, they don't care. And you want people to care. But I think we have to take a look at the big picture. They were a three-win team of the ACC and they were not competitive. Now, there were injuries, and youthfulness was a big part of it. Bottom line was, Eric, at times they were not competitive. Now, they lost some close games as well, but they won games this year they wouldn't have won last year. So they have taken a step forward, but it's just not a big enough leap to get into the NCAA tournament. So you have every right as a fan to be disappointed. Three straight years is a long time. But also, I don't know on October 1st how many fans expected this team to make the tournament. I didn't personally. I remember talking to a beat reporter of Notre Dame before the ACC season started. And remember, they had a rough December. And I asked, what do you think, 7 or 8 wins in the ACC? And they said, no chance. They gave me the number 3 or 4. Well, Eric, they've won 9 now. Mm-hmm. So they have come a long way.
9 times.
Thank you. So I have to look at this situation just a little different. Yes, they're going to miss the tournament, barring that ACC tournament championship win. But it's gotten better in terms of quality of product, but it's just not enough. They had such a big jump to make.
Yeah. Well, for me...
And the ACC was so down, you just can't pick up quality wins.
Well, for me, my question, and we had Mike Lightfoot, and that was fun having him in here, and I was really interested in his answer. I said, are they going to be better next year? And he hesitated, and then he said yes. And I think that's interesting.
The hesitation or the yes?
The yes.
Okay, I didn't know what you were referring to.
Because, again, a year like this... This is how people look at it. I'll give you a football analogy. In 1985, Jerry Faust's final team went 5-6.
Mm-hmm.
The next year, Lou Holtz's first Notre Dame team went 5-6. They could not have felt more different.
Well, the Miami loss wasn't on Holtz's watch, first off.
Well, but they were so much more competitive. You could say, okay, this is going somewhere.
Mm-hmm.
And that's what... A season like this, is it going somewhere? Is this taking them in a better direction? Is this going to be a continual improvement arc? What do you think?
For the Irish?
Yeah.
I hate to bypass your question.
Okay.
I only got to watch one practice filling in for Jack.
Okay.
When he was off for football duty. Right. So I only got to see one practice. So it's hard for me to judge Cormac Ryan except by what we're told, that he's going to be an impact guard.
Right.
But having not seen him, I'm really hesitant to give you a firm answer.
Right.
The first reaction is you lose John Mooney. And TJ Gibbs has been really good this year.
Mm-hmm.
Very dependable.
Who do they lose besides Mooney? Who else is
exiting? Well, Gibbs and Pfluger.
Okay, so three... And then
Durham and Jogo are coming back as grad students.
Okay. And then
Carmody comes back from injury.
Right. Is there any notable freshmen?
That's more of a Tom Noy question.
Okay.
I don't get into those star things, have you noticed? You're asking the wrong person.
Well, I mean, but wouldn't Carmody be an upgrade over the bench? I mean, isn't that a player that could give you some...
If he stays healthy, you would think so.
Instant scoring. It was just... Watching them the other night, it wasn't the Wake Forest game. It was the one that they came back
BC?
And won BC. I just couldn't believe how many open shots they could miss. It was, like, stunning. So.
All right. Well, the Irish have Florida State. Big challenge. The Seminoles, number 7 of the country. The Irish, some felt robbed down in Tallahassee when some calls did not go their way, despite the Irish shooting 27 free throws in that contest. So they have a chance to, a little payback to Florida State when they come to town later this week. And then we'll see where the Irish are for the ACC tournament. They like to finish as high as possible, of course. A little weaker game in that second round matchup. But first things first, let's see what they do against Florida State. Running short on time, Indiana loses to Illinois 67-66, 18-11. Their net is 54. Their quad one is still 6-9. And according to Lenardi, they are 6th from the last into the field. So they've got 5 teams between them and the line. And right now they are 2 teams away from being in that Dayton first 4 matchups. So they've got an opportunity coming up to beat Minnesota at home. Wisconsin playing great despite adversity. So Indiana ends up with two home games. They're winnable against Minnesota and Wisconsin. So a chance to pick up some quad one or quad two. Wisconsin would be quad one. Minnesota's still a very strong net, which I don't get them in Purdue. Mm-hmm. So that might be a quad one as well. So some chances for Indiana to enhance the resume. My five is coming up next. We'll talk Notre Dame and the NFL Combine during that question on 96.1 WSBT. And we're live on the SportsBeat app.
One question, five answers. This is the My Five Question of the Day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Today's My Five, Eric answers. Which five Notre Dame players had the best NFL Combine down in Indianapolis? So here we go. We'll begin with...
Ladies and gentlemen, this is number five.
And remember, some players like Khalid Kareem couldn't do anything down at the Combine other than interview. I'm going to go with Alohi Gilman at number five. His 40 time was, you know, borderline not what you want, but he just snuck in. 4.6 is good enough. But the quickness factor, the 20-yard shuttle, really I think is going to help him. He did well in some of the other events, and he got bonus points for cleaning up the end zone afterwards.
That's a good man.
Four!
I'm going to go with Julian Okwara here. He interviewed well from what I hear, and he also did well in the bench press for someone with long arms, 27 reps at 225. That's the start of what he needs to show, and he'll show the rest of that April 1st at Pro Day.
One of the few guys that was able to outbench the Tennessee punter Turku at 26.
Yeah.
He got him by one. Holy cow. All right. Eric ranking the Notre Dame players at the Combine who had the best weekend.
Okay. Number three.
I'm going to go with Troy Pride Jr. here, even though he wanted to go much faster than that and probably could have under other conditions, I guess. 4.40 is still fourth among cornerbacks, and he has had himself a really good pre-draft process. So Troy's my number three.
Did you see the still shot of Gilman on the 40 on the NFL Network where the clock started before he was out of his stance?
I did not.
Yeah. It says 0.11 and he's still in his stance.
So they cheated him.
I'm just reporting.
Okay.
All right.
Number two.
Number two and number one are a little bit hard to separate. I went with Cole Kmet here because Cole did kind of what was expected by people that knew how fast Cole was. He kept himself as the number one tight end in this draft, but he had a good day. I mean, he won both of the jumps for his position group as well.
What was the name of the secretary of number two?
It was...
Number one!
Frau Farbissina, wasn't it?
No, it wasn't.
Oh, no, I don't
Go
remember.
Ahead.
I know. Alada. And number one is Chase... is Chase Claypool, had a lot of success at Indianapolis, 4.42 40. He didn't do all the drills. He didn't do the three-cone drill and the 20-yard shuttle, but he was really good in the jumps. Chase Claypool absolutely helped himself.
What a great weekend.
It's a man, baby.
All right, that's the My Five. It is 5:56 at 96.1 WSBT and live on the Sports Beat.
Welcome back to another hour of Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat.
Touchdown, Notre Dame! 70 yards, Book to Lindsey.
He gets it out to Leshesky for three.
Got it! He got it!
Caught for the win, Kyle Rudolph!
From 96.1 WSBT.
Justin Fisher heading for the touchdown, his sixth of the night.
The Washington Nationals are World Series champions.
And that's a South Bend Cub Midwest League championship winner.
And the kick is good for the win. Pinheiro with a De Niro kick.
The sports leader.
And look who's coming up.
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
It is 6:07 at 96.1 WSBT. Sean Stiers, Darren Pritchett from our WSBT studios, brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. And by Rossini's Pizza. Carry Out, you're proud to bring home Lincoln Way East in Mishawaka, across from Beeger School. Just a reminder, coverage of the Class 4A LaPorte Boys Basketball Sectional begins tomorrow night right here on WSBT Radio, WSBTRadio.com, and the other app, the WSBT Radio app. Sean will have the call of five of the six games from that sectional. And tomorrow night, there's just one game. It's a 7 o'clock Eastern time tip, 6:50 pregame. It is defending state champion in another class, Culver Academy.
runner-up last year.
Were they
state champ the
I
year before.
They won.
Yeah.
I apologize.
No problem.
Oh, so back-to-back and a champion. Well, that's not too bad. So they're going to take on South Bend Riley in a first-round matchup over at LaPorte. And how many Indiana kids are on the Culver roster?
I think there's maybe three or four, at least on the varsity roster.
It's just ridiculous. I'm sorry. That's not a high school team.
Yeah.
But that's a story for another day. I know a lot of high school coaches across the state and area have an opinion on that, so we'll fight that battle another day.
Yes, indeedy.
And they played earlier this year, and Culver won against South Bend Riley by double digits, so Riley's had a tough draw the last 2 years. Remember, they were one of the best teams in the state last year,
yeah,
and had to play another best team in the state pen in that first Tuesday game.
Well, yeah, and I mean, sectional. If you go back the last, I guess it would be 4 years now, in 2017, when the sectional was out at Washington, Riley and Adams were the two best teams in the sectional. They had to play in the first round there. The next year, the sectional was at Mishawaka. They ended up winning that, and that was the year they went to semi-state. That ended up being their only loss. But then last year, they had to play Penn, as you said, in the first round. So two of the previous 3 years, they had to play. The two best teams were playing each other in the first round of sectionals. And Riley was one of those two teams. And now they've got to play Culver right off the bat.
Wow. Riley should pay double admission to the IHSA for next year just to avoid that first game.
Absolutely.
Craziness. All right. So that's what's happening Tuesday, and then Wednesday you'll have the call of Mishawaka and Adams. That is a 6 o'clock start, 5:50 pregame on WSBT Radio. We will not have the second game on Wednesday with LaPorte and Michigan City because we have Fighting Irish basketball.
That's right.
Against the Florida State Seminoles. And then Sean will be back over in LaPorte for the semifinals on Friday and the championship game on Saturday. But as we just mentioned, Wednesday at 6 o'clock, the Mishawaka Cavemen, of course, Cavemen basketball right here on WSBT Radio throughout the year. They will take on the NIC champion, South Bend Adams Eagles, in that first semifinal over there in, actually not a semifinal, kind of a quarterfinal, I guess.
Right.
Winner goes to the semifinal.
Yep.
And the head coach of the Mishawaka Cavemen, Ron Hicklinski, joins us right now on WSBT Radio with Sean Stiers and Darren Pritchett. Coach, it's Darren. Good to be with you. I guess happy Hoosier hysteria to you.
It's a great week for high school basketball players, for high school basketball coaches. Usually there's a snowstorm this week, but it looks pretty calm out there today.
Ron,
but no, it's wonderful getting ready to play sectional basketball.
Ron, I mean, you've been at this for a very, very long time. You're a very experienced coach. What is this week like for you, not only getting your game plan ready, but do you have to do a little psychological work on the players to avoid them from getting too hyped up for one of the more important weeks of their sports careers?
When you play in a state tournament, I've always believed this, that the team that can settle down the fastest and take the emotion out of the game the quickest has a chance really to set the pace or set the tone of the game. And our practices Saturday and today have been really, really intense and really, really trying to put our game plan in and trying to get our guys to understand that at the end of the day in our first game against Adams, they scored 38 points out of 70 on our mistakes, whether it be offensive rebound baskets by them, whether it be 17 points off of our turnovers, or 7 points on transition baskets by Adams. And those are correctable mistakes. So, you know, the last 2 days of practice, we've worked really, really hard at trying to rectify those mistakes and if you can do that against Adams, you have a chance to be in the game. But they're a really good team. Chad Johnson does a great job of coaching those guys.
Ron, this, of course, is your third season as head coach at Mishawaka. You've had three teams that have really been kind of completely different each year. How would you describe this year's team, especially where you are at this point in the season?
Well, you know, it's a team where we got off to a slow start. We were in some games and couldn't close them out, and then the schedule kind of turned in our favor a little bit around late December and January, and we got on a little bit of a roll. But again, we got back into conference play and played some of the South Bend schools. And at the end of the day, just couldn't find a way to get over the hump. And in February, we got on another roll and played a heck of a game against St. Joe on Friday night. St. Joe's a really good basketball mm-hmm. team. They have size. They have scores. They have guys. I mean, they won 17 or 18 games, and that's not by mistake. So I thought we played really hard, and I thought this season really sets up now for us to really maybe go in. And maybe John Adams will take us a little lightly. I mean, I don't know. They really put it to us. They beat us 70-47. We were down 5 at halftime, and they came out and really put it to us in the second half. So maybe it'll be time for us maybe to turn the tide now in this sectional.
Ron Heklinski, head coach of Mishawaka basketball, our guest. The Cavemen have won 4 of their last 5 games, a 12-10 team during the regular season. Coach, a couple of times you've referenced that first matchup against South Bend Adams, your opponent Wednesday night over in LaPorte. You mentioned in the second half Adams was able to pull away. When you take a look at the film of this game, when you try to build a game plan for this time against the Eagles, how as a coach do you find positives to take from that in order to show your team that, hey, we can do this against this team, but this and this happened, of course, the first time around. So how do you turn this into a positive?
Yeah, I just think you break it down and you show your guys the mistakes. You show your guys where you let John Adams' pressure get to you. You show yourself, your team, where the turnovers that you committed, they scored 17 points off of. And let's say you cut that in half. You show your team where they scored 14 points on offensive putbacks, and if you can clean that up, then basically you're right there. And those are mistakes that you can fix. Those are mistakes that you can work on in the gym and try and clean those up. And then it's that old adage where every high school team in the state comes in 0-0 now. And I've been at this long enough where I've had some teams that were number one in the state and just barely snuck by the opening game where they were playing a 500 team, because weird things happen in sectional play, and that's why it's really cool to be in this week of basketball, and that's why you always tell you guys, man, you got to hang in there and you got to come to work for these 2 days of practice because you never know what can happen.
Ron, you played about half the season with pretty much one set of guys. Then you got a couple of players, Sicario Thomas and Devon Parker, back in action midway through the season. What's that adjustment been like for a team to kind of throw a couple of new guys into the mix, you know, just in terms of the rotation and the whole thing when you're halfway through the season?
Well, it's kind of a trade deadline, to be honest with you, because you're not trading anybody, but you're getting a couple of new faces. And Devon Parker suffered a high ankle sprain in football and really struggled trying to play. We shut him down probably for about maybe 4 weeks. He's a really competitive and a really athletic kid. He really helps our pressure on the perimeter from a defensive standpoint. Sicario Thomas is a young sophomore that's immensely talented. Got himself jammed up a little bit and had to miss the first 11 games. And it's really a learning process with him now. But anytime you can put another talented player on the floor, I think it helps you.
Coach, you have 406 career victories. This is your 28th season as a head coach, so you've been through Hoosier hysteria many times. As you think back through the years, can you give me a moment or two that really stands out from your coaching career that involves something very special that happened in the state tournament in Indiana?
Yeah, you know, I think maybe my third or fourth year at Anderson, we we got on a roll, and that was back in the day to where, I mean, it wasn't class basketball. It was just, you know, everybody playing, and all those neighboring schools outside of Anderson, would come to the Wigwam, and those games were just really, really special. Alexandria, had a great basketball team, and we got by them. We got by, I believe, Jay County, maybe in the regional, and played Ben Davis in the championship game of the semi-state. Ben Davis had a great team. Steve Woody's he's just a pro. I mean, a great coach. Won a couple of state championships back to back, and they had a player named Mike Poizel. He was a great, great 3-point shooter, and in that semi-state game, you know, we didn't lose him. I mean, for 31 minutes, we didn't lose him. We stayed with him. He didn't get a clean look. I don't think he made a basket. And then in the 32nd minute, there was a loose ball. And as we all know, there's a lot of loose ball threes that happen because, you know, you're going after the basketball. Loose ball three with a couple of seconds left, Poizel buries a three, and we lose that game, and they go on to win the state. And we did a great job, but sometimes it's just not meant to be. All those moments were special. I mean, I had a team that was ranked number one in the state and got beat in the sectional championship game by a team that the experts would have said we should have beat. But they played their guts out, and all those games are so special when you talk about the 406 wins and roughly the 230 losses. That's 636 games, and I remember all of them like they were yesterday.
Ron, what for a guy who's been coaching as long as you have, what's your motivation as a coach right now?
I love working with young kids. I love teaching the game of basketball, and I use and actually basketball is the forum that I use to reach young people. I think young people are really, really cool. They're cool to be around. As a matter of fact, they keep me young, and watching them from day one, and then watching 80 practices later to this practice tonight. I think it's really nice to see how they improve. I think it's great to see how you bring a freshman in, and he's roughly a little kid. He's a 14, 15 year old kid, and then by the time he leaves, he's a young man. And that's always been really, really special to me.
You know, I see more and more people, it seems like, clamoring for a shot clock in basketball, and at this time of year, you know, I think we'll probably see more of it. But you get these crazy low scoring games and all that stuff. I don't know if I've ever asked you, what do you think about shot clock in high school basketball?
I think a shot clock would really be good in today's game. Now, back 15 years ago, when the players weren't as explosive, and the players weren't as individually talented. Now the players are so talented. The high school coach really used to be the guy who ran everything for the high school players. Now maybe the high school guy is number three because the AAU coach would now be number one. The personal trainer would be number two. And the dad would probably be three because he's paying one and two. And so these kids now are so gifted from an athletic standpoint, from a basketball standpoint, that the ability of them to go out and score and make the game exciting, I think is amazing. I think a shot clock would obviously speed that up a little bit. The little schools that still like to take time off the clock, it might hurt them a little bit, and they may have to devise some new plans. But I think with a 35-second shot clock, you would see kids really, you know, you are really exploding. And when I was coaching at Ball State, Rick Majerus, I had a saying: when the shot clock got down to about 6 seconds or 5 seconds, everybody on the bench would start hollering butter. Now, if you knew Rick Majerus, he loved butter. He loved food. He loved food, for God's sake. And so you get like 10 guys on the bench hollering butter, 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 and you know it's time to go one on one. And when you go one on one, in those scenarios, you might take a bad shot, but you're never getting taken out of the game because it's a shot clock shot. So I think that would be really exciting.
Butter.
The only reason that it's not in is maybe the expense that some of the high schools would have to incur to install those clocks.
Yeah.
But if you can imagine college basketball now and there's 6 seconds left and you got 8 guys on the bench hollering butter and Chandler Thompson rising up and taking one from 15, it's really cool, to be honest with you.
Speaking of Ball State, in 1990, you were still on the staff there, right?
Yes, I was. And what a phenomenal year. Rick Majerus had just left, and his number one assistant, Dick Hunsaker, took the job. I was coaching at a high school in Bloomington, Edgewood High School, and one of my really good friends was a great friend with Dick. And he called me and said, heck, you need to go interview with Dick. And I said, no, man. I said, I was at Illinois State. I spent some time there. I belong in high school basketball. And he said, no, he said, Dick is really a great guy. You need to go interview. So I took the interview. I got offered the job, and I turned it down because really high school basketball was really where I thought I belonged. 2 days later, Dick called me back and said, man, he said, come back up to Muncie and let's chat a little bit more. I want to tell you about our team. We have a super club coming back, blah, blah, blah. and so I went back up and he gave me the spiel again, and I ended up taking the job. And that first year was just an unbelievable team. We won the MAC. We had some transfers. A guy named Billy Butts played at Michigan, was from Muncie North High School. Paris McCurdy and Curtis Kidd transferred from Arkansas Little Rock. We had a great team. Chandler Thompson was a Prop 48, and that was his first year. Chandler had that great state championship game against Sean Kemp. Chandler played for Muncie Central. And so we were able to get into the NCAA tournament. We were able to play Oregon State in our first round matchup at Utah in Salt Lake City. Oregon State had the great player, great pro named Gary Payton. His nickname was the Glove. He was a great defender. He could score anytime he wanted to. And we had a great game. We played really, really well.
12-5 matchup, right?
Excuse me?
Well, you guys were a 12 seed. That was a 12-5 matchup, yep. I think, right? Yeah.
Yep. And we played it really well down to the end, and we had a chance at the end with maybe 2 seconds left. We ran it out of bounds play. Paris McCurdy scored and got fouled. Paris made a free throw with no time left, and we upset Oregon State. Our second game in Salt Lake City, excuse me for a second, was against Louisville. Louisville, coached by the great Denny Crum. They had Felton Spencer in the center, 7-footer. They had a kid named LeBradford Smith, who was a great guard. Louisville was my scout, and there's like a million stories when you get involved in this kind of stuff, and so the managers, so we go out to Salt Lake City, and the managers forget to bring the breakdown tapes, which I worked like 9 days on putting them together. And so Coach Hunsaker goes, where's the tapes? Heck, I said, guys, where's the tapes? The managers forgot to bring the tapes. So I'm up for 2 days straight, remaking the tapes, putting everything together for Louisville. Dick Hunsaker put together a great game plan, and again, we upset Louisville, which then took us into the Sweet 16 against Jerry Tarkanian's Las Vegas Running Rebels. Wow. which was played in Oakland, California.
Man.
Wow. Now, if you know anything about that team, if you remember anything about that team.
Larry Johnson.
Stacey Augman.
Yeah.
Larry Johnson.
Greg Anthony.
Greg Anthony. Moses Scurry. Well, I mean, just
Anderson
a great
Hunt.
Team. Yeah, I mean, Anderson Hunt, a great guard. And, I mean, what a game that was. Larry Eustace, who went on to be the head coach at Iowa State and at Colorado and at Southern Miss, Larry had that scout, and he just did a phenomenal job. And we're in the game the whole way. Midway through the second half, Chandler Thompson rises out of nowhere. And Billy, and at that time, Billy Packard, called it the best college dunk he'd ever seen. Larry went over, or Chandler went over Larry Johnson, and put back a missed shot, and it was phenomenal. We slowly got ourselves back in the game, and with maybe 8 seconds left, we're down two. We're down two in Vegas. Vegas beat everybody on their run to that NCAA championship by over 20 points. We're down two. We have the ball. And so we're in the huddle. I'm in the huddle with Dick. Leonard Drake is an assistant coach, a great player from Central Michigan. Larry's there. Len and I are looking at Dick, and I say, Dick, and I hate to say this now, but I say, Dick, man, let's go for three. We got two great shooters. We got Billy Butts. We got Greg Miller. Let's spread it out and take a three, because at the end of the day, if we take it into overtime, I mean, Vegas is super, you know. I mean, we could take it into overtime, but our chances of winning might not be great. Let's go for a three and try and win it. And he had Paris McCurdy on his mind from that Oregon State game. And so he drew a play up for Paris. The ball got kicked away. Our little point guard, Mike Spicer, picked the ball up at the free throw line, had a wide open free throw with about 3 seconds left, and tried an alley-oop to Chandler. The ball got tipped away, and obviously we lost the game, but it was great representation for the Mid-American Conference. It was great representation for Ball State University, and it was a phenomenal game to be a part of.
What makes the tournament so much fun.
No kidding.
Coach Heklinski, wow, thanks for that tremendous story, and congratulations on the season so far, and best of luck against South Bend Adams over in LaPorte Wednesday night at 6 o'clock South Bend time. Hopefully you guys have a wonderful night.
Well, you know, our guys put in maybe 95 to 100 good minutes tonight in practice, and we'll practice again tomorrow. So we'll see if we can represent Mishawaka High School on Wednesday night at LaPorte and take care of business.
All right. I know you will. Coach, best of luck to you. We'll talk to you soon.
All right. Thanks, guys.
All right. See you, Ron.
Ron Heklinski, the head coach of the Mishawaka Boys Basketball Program. Again, Adams and Mishawaka Wednesday night at 6. Just noticing Anthony Anderson from the Tribune. He's reporting that Warsaw's Doug Ogle is retiring.
I saw that.
So one of the top coaches in our area is calling it quits. So, Coach Ogle, congratulations on
Absolutely.
A great run. All right, we have Link Jarrett, the head baseball coach of Notre Dame, coming up in just a couple of moments. We'll sneak in a quick break. More coming up next on 96.1 WSBT and live on the Sports Beat. Sean and Darren with you. Sports Beat at 6:33 from 96.1. WSBT and live on the Sports Beat app. In just a couple of minutes, we're going to be joined by Notre Dame baseball coach Link Jarrett. The Irish basketball team fell to Wake Forest 84-73 over the weekend to fall to 18-11, 9-9 in the ACC, a quad two loss for Notre Dame. A game in which the Irish were down 16, able to take the lead, but end up losing by 11. Right here on the Notre Dame Basketball Network on Saturday, Zach Hillisland caught up with the head coach of the Fighting Irish, Mike Bray.
Coach, a tough decision to a Wake Forest team that is, I would say, much better than their record would indicate.
Well, they were really good today. Of course, they've been good this week with the win over Duke. We had no answers for the big fella. He is just hard to deal with. And then when we did jam it in, they made some timely threes. I love that we came back and gave ourselves a chance, but we just couldn't get over the hump. I love our effort. We always battle. Let's go back and get a little bit of rest before the final two home games.
And let's talk about that comeback a little bit, because you guys were down 16 early in the second half. You made some adjustments defensively. You played a lot of 1-3-1 zone, a lot of 2-3. That slowed down Sarr, got him in some foul trouble. Talk to the team's effort during that stretch.
Yeah, I thought we did a good job. Again, we started Nate in the second half, and I thought he gave us a lift just to try something different. The zone did help us for a while, and then eventually they hit two big threes, one in the corner, and Childress up top against our 1-3-1 where, okay, you know, it's kind of run its course. So, but give them credit. I think they're a gifted group, but I love our group. We need to go home and get some rest tomorrow. And then, my God, do we have a great opportunity on Wednesday.
Certainly a lot to say about Sarr. Had a massive double-double, his highest scoring total of his career. But we had a guy that put up a pretty big double-double as well. John Mooney fighting, digging, hitting some threes, really trying to fight to stay alive there.
Yeah, no, he's always going to be there. Johnny's, he was exhausted at the end. And and we almost couldn't sub for him in the second half. I thought he was really good. He's a machine. He needs a day off and then the home stretch.
All right, you got one game coming up here now against Florida State at home, a big opportunity for your team. What are going to be some of the keys heading into that one?
Well, I mean, we had our chances down there. You know, they're a lot like this group. They're just so athletic, and they get to the offensive board, and can we hold our own rebounding the basketball? Can we play against their pressure defense? They really guarded us down there. So, again, we have everything in front of us that we split this road swing, but you know, Wednesday night is a huge opportunity for our group.
All right. Thanks, Coach.
Thanks.
Okay. There's Mike Bray, his thoughts on the loss to Wake Forest. 6:35 at WSBT, along with Sean Steyers. I'm Darren Pritchett. We are pleased to have with us the head coach of the Notre Dame baseball team in his first season, Link Jarrett. And he's got the Irish off to a 7-2 start, coming off a three-game sweep of Presbyterian over the weekend, with a trip to Chapel Hill to take on North Carolina coming up later this week. Coach, it's Darren. Good to be with you. How are you today?
I'm doing great. Good Monday. Got back at a decent time last night for a change for the guys. We didn't quite get back the day we thought we would, but it was still close. We were close to Sunday night, so it was a good weekend for us. Greenville is a beautiful place. We stayed in Greenville, South Carolina. It's an awesome downtown, and we played day games, so it gave the guys a chance to relax in the evening and walk around a little bit, and Presbyterians in Clinton. But I've been to Greenville several times, and it was a good weekend for the guys all the way around.
Outstanding, Coach, and you're off to a 7-2 start. I'm sure in your first season, the guys are extremely pumped right now. You're probably excited about your program. So besides getting off to a 7-2 start, I know a part of this whole process of taking over a program is getting your culture in place and everybody going through the process, and the process leads to wins. How well has this group handled those things early on?
Well, you know, the guys are elite individuals, and they're fantastic students, number one. They're good people, and they're hungry to learn and implement some of the ideas that we had. I mean, we're not trying to reinvent the way the game is played. I'm sure my thoughts are different on some of the things we're doing. They've adapted well. Our system, offensively and defensively, is a little complex, and there's some demands mentally and physically on what we're trying to do. I feel like they've responded well. I think there's a couple areas, you know, our all around our short game, our bunting game, and using that the right way at the right time hasn't been what we need it to be. But, you know, there I see little things as we compete that you have to fine-tune and make sure your system is in place. Culturally, the guys are meeting our expectations of what needs to be done. You know, we have high standards for how we do things in the classroom and on the field, and I feel like we're there. Now, we have to continue to get better, obviously, on the field. Our defense has been one of the things I knew looking at our program years past, like we had to improve our defense, and knock on wood, so far, we've done that. I've moved some people around. I think it gives them a better chance to handle what we're asking them to do physically at their position. That's been positive. Our offense has been up and down. You know, and on the mound, when you have Sheehan on Friday, you feel good about that. You know, Rayo and Mercer have started and have been fairly effective, maybe not quite as consistent within the start as you would like, but it's been competitive. And then we've been able to get Tommy Vail the ball out of the bullpen. One of the reasons we wanted to use him in the bullpen is because those guys can impact, if you handle it right, two games a weekend, and when you get into the midweeks, maybe they can help you in a midweek game too. So his appearances are right where they need to be. If we can get Joe Boyle a little bit more consistent, probably better than he was last year at this time, but we still need to make some strides so his inning workload matches his appearances, and he and Vail would be really good weapons out of the bullpen. So overall, I'm pleased with where we are. I still see some things that we need to do a lot better once we get into the meat of the schedule here.
Well, and kind of along those lines, Link, with 9 games and 3 weekends now under your belt in your, you know, your first 9 games in your tenure at Notre Dame, what are maybe some of the biggest things that you do know about your team right now that you didn't know leading up to the start of the season?
Well, you go in and you have a decent idea. I think we have right now 2 guys behind the plate that do a good job, but they also may benefit from not catching every single game. And Alexander and Lamana have each had very good moments for us, but at that position, if you can tag team it a little bit because of the demands mentally and physically behind the plate, I think that can help. So until you play 3 9-inning games in a row, some of these you don't know how to handle the personnel until you get into the fights a little bit, and we're learning. Brannigan had never played the third base position. He's a very athletic kid that can pitch, played short in center field. He's a fantastic athlete. If you wanted to grade him out, he's probably one of the best athletes on our campus, and we put him at third, and just we're letting him develop and learn on the fly, and he's done some really good things over there. It's still a new position to him, but I'm very pleased with how he's played. And to go into this fall thinking that he would be your third baseman come early March, probably not exactly what we thought, but it was a good move. And Prisner, who played some second last year while Miller was at short, we felt like maybe flipping those guys. Miller moves laterally really well and has very quick hands, double play stuff, probably as a second baseman. He's designed for that. And Prisner plays a little bit more straight ahead, which is good at the shortstop position. Nico at first base, you know, he's a physical guy. He's got good hands. So you think he can handle that. So the interior defense has been pretty good, and you're still learning as you go about what they can and can't do, but I feel like I've learned that what we're doing has helped. Myers in center field, he was hurt all fall, never got to see him until the spring. The guy stole 6 bases in the game the other day. He's got tremendous instincts. I did not know that his base running instinct, shoot, he might have 14 or 15 stolen bases already this year. I think he had 20, 22 or 23 all of last year. So his talent is showing. And I think our offensive system allows him to really flourish. Brooks Coetzee did not know his defensive capabilities in right field. Tremendous jumps and breaks on the ball. And again, until you see day in, day out, batted ball, reads and jumps, he's made 2 or 3 diving catches in Alabama at UAB, really ran all the way almost into center field and caught a ball up against the wall in deep, deep right center. I've seen him do some things that are, it's really a pleasant surprise how he's handled right field. And, you know, Cole and Gilgenbach have, and Ziska, you know, those three have really shared the left field spot and the DH spot. On the negative side, I did not anticipate being without Danny Jung, who's one of our more complete hitters. You know, hamstring issue in the preseason, and thought he was good to go, and he tweaked that thing again Friday. So he's, you know, that's a good left-handed, very experienced bat. That's one of our better hitters that's going to be out for a little while. So that, I did not see that coming. You thought he would be penciled into the middle of the lineup where he belongs, but we're going to have to fill that void. Nico finally got on a little streak there this weekend where he hit 4 home runs, and he's a unique athlete in the fact that he doesn't really have to completely square balls up. He still has the ability to hit them out. And I saw it this weekend. I had not seen him go on a streak like that in my time, even in the fall and the preseason, hadn't seen it. I saw it this past weekend, and, you know, when he gets going, he's as dangerous as anybody in the country.
And for fans not familiar, Nico Cavadas is from Penn High School,
right,
just down the road. So 5 home runs for Nico already. Link Jarrett, head coach of Notre Dame baseball, is our guest on WSBT Radio. Like, it'll take me a second to get to my question, but we're pretty close to the same age. So when we were in high school, baseball was played a little differently at the major league level. I grew up an hour from St. Louis, and they used speed and the artificial turf to their advantage, winning one World Series and coming up short in two others. Now today, professional baseball is on grass. Power pitching, power hitting is just such a big part of the game. But at the collegiate level, there is a lot of field turf facilities that you play at, including your own facility at X Stadium. I noticed you have 25 steals already this year. That is 14th in the NCAA. Is it possible, if you wanted to, and I don't know what your plan is long term, but can you win in collegiate baseball playing that old school whitey ball type of baseball in which speed is a major factor and using the surface as an advantage?
Absolutely, you can win in college with that type of baseball. Number one, the ball in Major League Baseball has evolved as much as the style of play. The ball is, if you talk to Rawlings, like it's a different ball. Like Major League Baseball is playing with a ball that's so tight and so hard. They wanted to generate home runs, and that's what people like to see when they go to a Major League game. Our ball is a little bit different. It doesn't carry like the big league ball. It doesn't come off the bat as hard. So to think that we have a guy in Nico and Gilgenbach, when he's on it, they can hit fly balls that go out to the opposite field, but it's not like you see in the big leagues. So basically everybody in a major league lineup could hit an opposite field fly ball type home run, and I don't think you get that in college. Therefore, you have to find other ways to generate runs against good arms, and stealing bases and bunting and hit and run – like your Cardinals did, that's a little bit more in line with how we have to play to perform the way we want to perform. And I saw it this weekend. Like, you're going to run into an arm that you may not have the outright capabilities to just beat him swinging the bat. It sometimes catching them off guard and stealing third base and squeeze bunting, those type of things can almost – distract and unravel a good pitcher who's not used to having distractions and negative things happen to them when they're on the mound. So we have to use it, and it does win. And altering our surface, I will tell you this. Our field turf is one of the original field turf-type fields, and what they've done in the last 3 or 4 years is they've started to alter the turf a little bit, so your dirt areas like the home plate dirt circle and the baselines and the infield dirt, even though it's turf, they've created ways to allow it to play a little bit more like clay. So we're actually going to redo our infield this summer, and there's three programs that did it this past off season this summer that they love it, and they said it's very similar to a baseball field, like clay. And I think the way I like to run the games and coach and the guys we're trying to recruit that are very athletic, I think it'll lend nicely. And, you know, it's obviously within the confines of the rules. You're not trying to alter to the point of cheating on what you're doing, but it's more of a baseball-type synthetic turf, which I love, and right up your Cardinals would love it.
And you know what? It's fun to watch, too. That style of baseball, Link, was as fun as a fan to watch as anything I have seen over the last 30 years. Yeah. I just think it's more exciting than just seeing
a lot of action.
Home runs. Just home runs are fun, but triples and double steals and squeeze bunts are a lot of fun.
Yeah, no doubt about it. And, the fielding percentages at the major league level, I think we take for granted how good they are defensively. Like, Justin Turner, you look at some of these big guys that, you know, the big old beards, and they look like the baggy uniforms, then they don't necessarily look like tremendously athletic, good defensive players. They're phenomenal defenders, every one of them. And I think they make it look so easy that you take it for granted when you watch a major league game. In college, the defense overall is not as sound as it is in the big leagues. The kids aren't necessarily as polished, as fast, as physical yet. So that's why the strikeout in Major League Baseball, I'm not going to say that it's 100% acceptable, but it's far less acceptable in college because the ball in play has so many variables of what could happen in the college game. Where right. in the big leagues, I feel like they feel like a ball that's not hit well is an out, so a strikeout is no different to them in some organizations. I don't think that's a direct correlation to what you see in college. So putting the ball in play with two strikes and manufacturing and doing those things, I think is an essential part of a good college offense in a baseball program.
I love that.
Yeah. Link, you spent, of course, your entire playing and coaching career in the South, in either Florida or the Carolinas before you came here. So what's been the biggest adjustment for you coming up north here this year?
Shoveling off the
I mean, I kind of have an idea of what it is, but what do you, what's well, the biggest you know, adjustment overall?
Here's what this is. There's a couple ways to look at this. I'll tell you this. It's the first time in my career that you can plan out your practice and actually do it.
Hmm.
Because, you know, in North Carolina, you may get a week where we were not equipped to go inside.
Hmm.
So you were waiting field conditions, weather conditions. There were so many variables when you're trying to get your field ready for a potential practice. And when it got to 2:30 or 3 o'clock, you still may not know if you can execute the practice plan that you drew up. I will say that that has been a little bit refreshing for me at Notre Dame. I know most of it's inside, but you know that once you draw it up, you're going to be able to go do and work on what you plan working on that day, whether it's indoors in Loftus or in your indoor facility at Eck. You're going to be able to do what you plan to do. It's how well you plan it and how creative you are. So the structure and staying on track was actually a little bit refreshing. I'm not dealing with the tarp. I'm not dealing with frozen infield clay and whether you could go outside or not.
Yeah.
So that's been pretty nice. Hmm. And the downside of it is you've got to hustle because we share our indoor the field with softball and men's and women's lacrosse and the track team. So we have to share it. So your timing can be a little bit tricky. That's the downside.
Okay.
You may not get a complete week of practice like you'd lay out if you knew you were going to be able to go outside and practice. But so it's unique in both respects. You're going to do what you plan on doing, but the timing of it might be a little less in some sense than you wish it would be if you've got to share with the other team. So, you know, people think it's sometimes a negative, but you know, you're not outside battling the elements in the field. You're equipped to do what you need to do indoors when the time is there for you to have the facility. So it's
that?
Been okay.
Yeah.
Yep.
Link, congratulations on the great start to the year, and good luck to you guys heading down to Chapel Hill to take on North Carolina. We really enjoyed talking baseball with you. That was a very enlightening conversation on field turf and the style of play. So we thank you so much for your time, and we'll talk to you again soon.
Thank you, guys. I appreciate the insight and the questions. Thank you.
Take care.
Link Jarrett, head coach of Notre Dame baseball, the Irish off to a 7-2 start heading to Chapel Hill this weekend. It is 7 minutes in front of the top of the hour at 96.1 WSBT and live on the Sports Beat. Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser and Rossini's Pizza on 96.1 WSBT, South Bend.